The Zone with Jason Anderson.
So what we had planned for this segment, we got into Jack Bleep of what we were going to do here.
Weekdays from 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, we'll continue right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Jason Anderson with you. We head up until 2 o'clock. Let's talk to Kendall Gammon, Freeman Health System, centered around you. Freeman Health System, your local hospital joining your circle of trust, presents Kendall Gammon each and every week, along with Crown Automotive in Lawrence. They are your Lawrence new and certified pre-owned Toyota and Volkswagen dealership near Kansas City, Olathe, and Topeka. Experience the Crown difference at crownautomotive.com. Kendall, welcome into the show. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good. Yourself?
I am doing just fine. Looking forward to the game this weekend with the Chiefs and Bucks. We got a lot of stuff to talk about with the Chiefs, but I wanted to, first of all, congratulate the Gorillas from unranked 3 weeks ago to number 7 in the country now. They are a rising rocket right now through the rankings.
Well, I appreciate you mentioning that. And yeah, a tough game though last week, 14-13 over Emporia State. And then you had Northwest, which UCO upset. I mean, the NIAA just top to bottom is a rough conference. And, hopefully both teams, I say this, the Gorillas and Northwest can win this week. So you can have a great showdown next week in Pittsburgh. But, thanks for mentioning it. It's fun to be a part of, obviously.
Yeah, I was really hoping that, I was watching the game, keeping track of Northwest last week. I was hoping that it would be a couple of 5-0 teams matching up next week down in Pittsburgh. But still, I mean, both take care of business. You should have a top 15 matchup in the country down in Pittsburgh next week at 2 o'clock. So that should be a lot of fun regardless. So
actually that game may be sold out already, or it's getting close. So if people want tickets, they need to be getting on it sooner than later. But yeah, it should be a fun one.
Absolutely. Kendall Gammon is our guest. Okay, it wasn't a fun one for the Chiefs and the Colts in Indy. What do you take away, and what did you see in the surprising 20-17 loss to the Colts?
You know what, Jason, I think KC played a C-minus game and still had three or four opportunities to win. So I try to see that as a positive. But those are the games that you can't let go. I appreciate the fact that several players on the team, several stars, including Kelce, including Mahomes, I mean, they stepped up and said, it was me. This was on me. I should have done better. And, of course, that starts at the top with Andy Reid. But that's one of those games, and it'd be interesting to watch the Colts throughout the year and see if they turn into the team that many thought they would be in terms of challenging for the division crown and getting into the playoffs. But as they say, it's on to Tampa Bay, and that's a whole other game in itself. But some of the Chiefs things I didn't like from the Chiefs, the running game just wasn't there. When you have 12 touches by Clyde Edwards-Helaire and you only have 39 total yards, zero rushing, that's an issue from the running back position, and probably I would say from the offensive line position as well.
I was on Sunday Sound Off with 41 Action News on Sunday, and Tim Grunhard was a part of it, and he said something pretty interesting because, the takeaway from the game, we look at how well the defense played and then the struggles of the offense and the special teams had a day that left a lot to be desired. And he said, when he played football, it was always the mantra, you can't lose two phases. You might be able to lose one, but you can't lose two phases of the game in the NFL. And he said, just plain and simple, the Chiefs lost two phases, and you lose the game against an inferior team. You win two of the three. You can afford to lose one phase when you're playing against a team that you know you're better than, but a team that you are not as good as or on par with, obviously it'd be best to win all three, but you can't lose two of the three, and the Chiefs did that.
Well, yeah, and the special teams I know you're talking about. It was just ugly, for lack of a better word. And Jake Tobe talked about it, that, some of those things just happen. They still have confidence in Sky Moore. But I will say, as I was watching it, I'm curious your thoughts too, but as I was watching it, when they fumbled that punt, and then a couple plays later they're in the end zone, I'm like, uh-oh, here we go. You just gave a team that you could have taken confidence away from with that punt and that three and out, and now you just let them back in and gave them the thought of, okay, well, maybe we can get something going here. And that's what you saw the rest of the day. And for whatever reason, the Chiefs were just off a little bit. And lots of times guys running free down the field offensively for the Chiefs, but just needed another fraction of a second to allow Patrick Mahomes to deliver the ball, and it just didn't happen.
I gave you credit earlier this week because our conversation last week, we were talking about the Colts, and one of your analysis of the game and not necessarily matchup, but a bigger picture view was, you know, a team like the Colts that's struggling, that's coming off such a bad loss to the Jags, and a Chiefs team that just beat the Chargers. Chiefs are feeling good. The Colts are trying to figure out what's going on. And you said, you know, early on, if you get up early, you punch them in the mouth early, you got a team that's struggling that'll start to doubt themselves and they might just go away. But don't let them have early momentum and early excitement that, okay, this is the team we thought we would be. Now let's go play our football. And I thought about that when Sky Moore fumbled the punt and they scored. I thought, well, this was the chance to do exactly what Kendall was talking about. You go three and out, you get the ball right back. If you go and score, then it's one of those to where you might just be off to the races in that game. But that one mistake that results in a three-yard touchdown drive sort of changed a lot in that game.
Yeah, it really did. And again, as you look at the stats, anytime you lose the turnover battle, and one of those in the special teams, and it leads to a touchdown. You know, I forget what the percentages are, but we used to get them read to us each and every day when I was at Vermil for things like that happening. But it was really, really high. You're really behind the eight ball when you give up points in that fashion. And that's what they did. You know, I thought the defense played well for three and a half quarters, and I think it was yesterday that Spagnuolo talked about just that. They played well for quite a while, but he said even with, you know, not phantom call, but whatever happened with Chris Jones, which is another subject. The fact is they still had a chance with 4.5 minutes to shut them down and get off the field, and they didn't. So in his mind, they didn't get the job done either, and I appreciate that from a coordinator. And quite honestly, I appreciate Spagnuolo in terms of how he talks, because most coaches understandably don't give that much information, and I think he gives a lot. But you know what? It is what it is. You deal with it. Mm-hmm. It happens, and you got to move on. You cannot let one bad game lead to another bad game.
Visiting with Kendall Gammon, he's presented by Freeman Health System and Crown Automotive in Lawrence. You mentioned the special team, so you're a guy that spent so much of your career in that phase of the game and different things that took place. The fake field goal has been talked about, and Dave Tobe said yesterday, and I appreciate that he was a little candid in that. I don't know what the percentage breakdown was, but the question was, you know, how much was it? This is something you saw on film. You wanted, you got the look you wanted. It's something you practiced. And how much was it maybe just a lack of faith in the kicker? And he said, well, you know, it wasn't that. It was a little that. It was a little bit of the, but it was really something we saw on film and practiced for and things like that. It could have been easy for Dave Tobe to go, oh, it had nothing to do with Amendola. It was all about what we saw. We got the look. But I think it had to be a combination of it's a 41-yard field goal, and Butker would have put it between the uprights. You would expect to put 3 points on the board, along with something they had practiced and maybe something they saw, and so they went with that call. They just didn't execute it. But I did appreciate that Dave Tobe said, you know, even if it was a small amount that played a role, a small amount in the fact that they didn't really have a lot of faith in Amendola in that. And that's tough to do when you feel like, you know, do I trust my kicker to put it between the uprights? Because it kind of changes your thought process, your mindset when you're going down on these drives and to win these close games.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I will say this, though. Generally over my career, Jason, each and every week, you had some type of gadget play in the special teams dialed up. If you saw some things, if it presented itself, then you would think about it. And maybe they thought about it more this week because of Amendola, what's going on, and how the first kick had gone. That being said, had the look not been there that they expected and not been the way they needed to actually run the fake, I don't think they would have run it, because any – and Amendola is not a bad kicker. He missed that one. I understand that. But a kicker, 41 yards, that should be close to automatic in this day and age. So I think they would have kicked it potentially had that not been there. But it was. And then when they lined up, and then when I say been there, it's what they saw on the previous field goal and how they were going after things. So when it lined up this time, I think Coach Tobe said that, you know, they were lined up a little bit different, and Tommy didn't get the ball out of his hands quite soon enough. He even mentioned the fact that he wished he had seen it a different way, but he just felt like he wasn't sure. There's a little indecision, then he threw it, and at that point it was too late. And again, those are the things that happened. Now, the one good thing about that is it does put other teams on notice. It's like, okay, now we've got to watch out for these things as well. And while it may not happen, it does waste practice time of the other teams preparing for things like that.
Has there? We hear about fake field goals or fake punts that you get out there, you're ready to kick it, and then all of a sudden you see something you can audible into, a fake or something like that. I'm assuming it could be the other way, right? So you go out there and you say, okay, this is what we're going to call. We're going to run this fake field goal to Noah Gray and Tommy. You're going to do what we've been practicing, and if they don't get the look that they wanted to see, can you audible into just a regular kick and say, okay, Matt, now you're kicking it. Okay, I know we called a fake, but be ready to go and kick the damn thing.
Yeah, exactly right. They have some type of call, and depending on whether it's there or not, because you can go out there with a fake called and then you call it off, or you can go out there normal. If you absolutely get something, they could potentially call a fake. It normally doesn't happen that way. Mm-hmm. Generally, you go out there and everybody knows that it's planned to be a fake, and that's what you're doing, unless there's a code word said, and that calls it off, and you go ahead and kick it. So that's generally how it happens.
Kendall Gammon is our guest. He's presented by Freeman Health System and Crown Automotive in Lawrence. If Harrison Butker cannot go this week, the kicker that they signed is named Matthew Wright. It would be the third kicker in four games for this Chiefs team. How difficult is that to adjust from the snap to the hold to the kicker to the all of that stuff when you just got maybe a little different timing, just a small little different mechanism between those three? How difficult is it to adjust three kickers in 4 weeks?
Only difficulty there, Jason, is the kicker himself dealing with it because okay. He hasn't been with that operation. Winchester and Tommy, they have the operation down, Pat. It's going very well. Winchester's one of the best mm-hmm. long snappers in the league. He's given the laces most every time, so I can't say enough about him and what he's doing. People have already forgotten me, but they'll definitely forget about me with him being in there, which is a good thing. So they've got that operation going on, and it's just up to the kicker. Right to get used to it, and they will get plenty of reps this week because they have their period, and then they've got the rest of the practice, and you don't have to kick to get used to it. You just have to line up there and go through the motions and step, and I know they're doing that throughout the week.
Visiting with Kendall Gammon here in the Zone. You said one of the things that you really like to hear was the players taking accountability. Travis Kelce said it was his fault. Patrick Mahomes said he made mistakes. Chris Jones said it was on him. And Creed Humphrey talking about the issues that the offensive line had. And so everybody stepping up and saying, well, actually, it's our fault. It's what we did. We're the issue. Tommy Townsend saying, I should have thrown the ball earlier. I saw a look and it wasn't what I was actually thinking it was and should have got rid of the ball. And so everybody's taking accountability. There's no, finger pointing or blaming. And I was listening to the Travis Kelce, Jason Kelce podcast on Wednesday night, and Jason Kelce was saying essentially that he was asking Travis, all right, what are you guys doing? And in practice, how do you guys respond? And he's like, just get back in there. Travis said, just get back. Can't wait to get back. And then, look at everything you did. You got to self-scout. You got to look at yourself and look at the film, and you got to have an honest, real assessment of what you did. And it's not about, what your teammate did. And Jason said, well, that's the only way to respond, because if you've got a team that starts to even look around and say, well, this guy didn't do that, he's like, that thing festers and you start to lose game after game. And Travis Kelce was immediate and was like, no, it's not what we do. Everybody takes accountability. And so that's encouraging, to hear that, to hear Jason say, well, if this is happening, you're toast. And for Travis to go, no, everybody's taking an honest assessment. There's no, Sky Moore made a mistake. We go and pick him up and say, we're all here together. You're not the only one. I dropped a touchdown. This guy did that. This guy did that. We all do this together. And so that gives me a little more confidence, Kendall, in a response this weekend against Tampa and not letting one game beat you twice.
I would agree. You said it great, and that's what you want. And I said it when we started this interview, which was, it starts with Big Red and how he does. I mean, you've been in those press conferences. I mean, he takes responsibility for everything all the time, oftentimes when he really shouldn't. But that's what he believes, because he's leading the charge. And I think any time that you decide that somebody else is the problem instead of yourself is when you start to really have issues. And that's just not the thing with Kansas City. This locker room is about as good as they get. It's young on defense. But in general, they've got a lot of good leadership in there. It's crazy to say that Patrick and Kelce, it's easier at 10 years, but those guys are the veterans in there. Those are the type of guys that you want leading the charge. And they're doing a good job. I expect them to come out and play well this week. People have asked, was it a I don't know, distraction with everything going on this week and where they're going to play. And what they said was exactly right, which they're getting on a plane. They're going to go somewhere and play anyhow. Tampa Bay, however, going down to Miami, changing headquarters, practicing there or whatever, dealing with your families, wondering what's going on with the weather, that played a big part. There's no doubt doubt about that. I had that issue happen with me when I was with the Steelers, and we couldn't practice outside my rookie year because it was snowy. And Cowher, we came back and said, listen, I hope you guys are going to handle this the right way. We can't practice, study, this and that. You know, said to get out of there. And of course, it was like school and recess. School was out early, and we just ran down the hall screaming, loving life. But we went to Chicago that week, and we just got our butts handed to us. I mean, it does make a difference. So I'm curious to see this game.
The kicking part of it, you know, I mentioned three different kickers in four games if Harrison can't go this weekend.
Right.
That's got to be a I guess it's different when Spags, you know, says we got to get on a plane no matter what, whether we're going to Minnesota or going to Tampa. But the difference for the kicking game is you're either in a dome or you're outside, you know, kicking on grass. How big of a difference is that in practicing, or these guys are so good that surface may not make that big of a difference? If it's nice outside, the weather's going to be beautiful in Tampa, you know, after it was, you know, crazy this whole week, it's going to be clear and 75 and no wind really. So perfect conditions. But, you know, how much is there that extra prep of, well, we're either going to be on turf or grass? It's not like which stadium and it's the same surface.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. That's a question that's worth asking. And the fact is, most people would think, oh, well, you want to be inside on turf. Being inside is certainly that, because the only air you got to worry about is air conditioning. But the turf is actually longer inside with the field turf, whereas if you're down at Tampa, if it's nice weather, that grass is cut so low that it's, in my opinion, it's easier to kick off that than it is inside with field turf, which is something I don't think a lot of people would expect. But again, these kickers, when they get to this level, they've played on so many different surfaces, either, you know, great manicured natural grass fields or the field turf, which are what they are. They're good either way. They can do both and practice on both in Kansas City. Quite honestly, I say that you actually can't get the exact look of what a turf field would be like, even if you go outside Kansas City, because the grass is different and they just don't cut it as low as they do in Tampa and also Miami, for that matter.
Kendall Gammon is our guest. All right, Kendall, last one for you. I've said all week I don't really have a feel for this game. Do you have a feel and maybe a score in mind of what you think might happen this weekend down in Tampa?
Yeah, you know, that defense of Tampa is good, obviously. That defensive backfield, if they get pressure on Mahomes and get it going, that could be tough. I still see the Chiefs coming out with a victory somewhere in the 23-13 range, 23-16. I don't think it's going to be a huge high-scoring game because of that. And, you know, we'll see. I mean, that defense is good. And if you don't believe me, just ask some of the defensive linemen there at Tampa. They'll tell you how good they are also. So it's going to be interesting to see how Kansas City offensively steps up to meet that challenge, because make no mistake, they heard those words and they're using that as bulletin board material.
I'm glad you brought that up. I wrote it down and I skimmed right over it, so I know that I said that was the last one, but does that take place in locker rooms when a Shaq Barrett said, we're going to have a coming out party against this offensive line? We got a chance to really do some really good things against these guys. They hear that, right?
Oh, there's no question about it. We say bulletin board material. It's not always put on the bulletin board, but sometimes it is. But in general, you talk about it, you know. I mean, you kind of chuckle about it a little bit, but it's one of those chuckles like, okay, we'll see. And I think they would never admit to it, because that's not how they hold themselves. But Mahomes, Kelce, that whole offensive unit, I think they heard it, and it's not something they really care for. So, again, I'm looking forward to seeing what happens.
Yeah, Mahomes yesterday or Wednesday answered the question to respond to Shaq Barrett with 6 seconds of, I believe in my guys up front. I believe in those five guys in front of me. That was it. It was only a six-second clip, and that told me all I needed to know about Mahomes' irritation with hearing that and maybe what that would mean in the locker room.
And not only that, but the tone in which he said it, Jason.
That's right.
It was different. It was different than some of his playful tones. You could tell he changed his demeanor completely, even while he just said that 6-second clip.
Kendall Gammon, our guest here in the Zone. Kendall, great stuff. Really appreciate the time. Best of luck to Pitt State this weekend to see if we can get a top 15 matchup next week down in Pittsburgh. And we'll see what happens with the Chiefs and Bucks, and look forward to our conversation next week. Thank you, Kendall. I appreciate it, man.
You bet. Make it a great day.
Hopefully that is the case coming up on Sunday. There's Kendall Gammon, Freeman Health System, centered around you. Freeman Health System, your local hospital, joining your circle of trust. And also Crown Automotive in Lawrence. They're your Lawrence new and certified pre-owned Toyota and Volkswagen dealership near Kansas City, Olathe, and Topeka. Experience the Crown difference at crownautomotive.com. We will take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll continue rolling. We'll hang out with Mick Schaefer. We'll hear from the Chiefs later on in the show at the 1 o'clock hour, and the cuts as well before the show is over. More Zone next.
The Zone with Jason Anderson.
I've tried a lot of different things to get these. There's a couple squirrels that keep wanting to eat the tomatoes and my apples.
Oh, I got it. Don't plant tomatoes.
Weekdays from 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Thank you to Kendall Gammon joining us, talking some Chiefs football. He's got 23-13. Matt Derrick has 23-19. I'm looking forward to our predictions that will all include 23.
The number 23.
And Beards will be 2-3.
That's right.
I'll have those numbers.
He will be the getting the score, the losing team first. Putting the losing team's score first. You guys lost 2-3?
That's what Jason Kelce said the other day.
Yeah, he said
17-20.
You guys lost to the Colts 17-20.
What is wrong?
Then Kelce dropped an F-bomb. Travis being
I think
that.
He's mad at him saying the lower
yeah,
score.
Yeah, that's what it was about, for sure.
Bleep! I figured you'd say that. Yeah. It's 20-17, you
I mean,
idiot!
We played okay. We deserve to lose, but I'm really mad about how you said the score.
Why are you getting things wrong, Jason? Ah!
Beards, can you mark that for me?
Yeah, but I said it.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, I was talking in the third person.
Third person, yeah.
You know, I hate when Jason gets things wrong.
You're sort of the Ricky of sports talk.
That's right. That's right. Jason loves when Jason does sports talk. Jason loves talking. I don't know about you, but Jason is a fan of Jason's show.
Beard, can you just break the F8 button off? just wail on that one for a little bit. I don't want to lose any of that.
Was it
content?
Was it the press conference after he broke the stolen base record when he said Ricky is now the greatest of all time?
It's so good,
just so amazing. I love it, man. He invented the popping the collar. When you watch his home runs as he's going around first base, he's doing this. He's popping the jersey collar.
He was
the
first to do that.
I've never seen anybody do it before. It became popular, right? But in the 80s, and like when he hits a home run, he's rounding first base and he's doing this to his jersey. I don't know why, but I'm like, oh, wow, he was way ahead of the curve at that thing. Ricky was way ahead of the curve, and that's when he would have said, Ricky's way ahead of the curve. Ricky knows Ricky's way ahead of the curve. He's very excited about this. Did you see Deion Sanders' son?
No.
Not a guy named Deion Sanderson.
That's Deion.
Did you see him? Yeah, he's a local firefighter. He's a great guy. Just a great guy. No, Deion Sanders' son, who's a really good quarterback. And
in high school still or college?
No, college. He plays for Deion.
That's right. I think he's my oldest age. Is he like a freshman?
He's younger. Yeah, he's not. Freshman, I don't think he's not draft eligible yet. But people think that he's got a chance. Like
he's at Jackson State.
Yep, and he's been really awesome. And he had like the first half. I think he had like 5 or 6 touchdowns. And so he's sitting in the fourth quarter, and I don't remember his number. It might be 1. Like his number might be 1 or 12. Let's just go 12. It's easier. And they were interviewing him on the sideline. He goes, 12's got good receivers. Well, you know what? When 12's offensive line, you know, really helps 12 out. So, you know, as long as 12's got help around him, 12's going to be fine. Like it is Deion. It's Deion. Deion's going to be fine. Deion's good. Oh, Deion? Deion's this. Deion's that. So his son is even going the Deion route talking, man. It's interesting.
He was on an episode of the Manning Show.
Deion or his son?
Both.
Oh.
We're on it. The Peyton Manning Show on ESPN Plus.
Peyton's Place.
Yes. Yeah.
And it would have been like a sophomore or junior in high school at the time, running routes. And against his dad. So, yeah, I remember him. And are they good, Jackson State?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're good.
I should probably be betting on them.
Yeah, no, they're pretty good. And now there's talk about, you know, whether Deion gets a promotion, like if somebody at a Power 5 is going to hire Deion.
Yeah.
And then the question for Deion is, so then do I take that or do I stay here and live up to what I had talked about by going to Jackson State of doing the most good at an HBCU and giving more attention to that? Or do I get more attention as, no, I can coach
internal
anywhere.
Internal tug of war for Deion, right? Because he loves the attention.
Exactly. I can coach at a Power 5. I can coach anywhere. Now, go to the SEC, Deion. Now everybody's going to be talking about Deion in the SEC. They're already talking about him at Jackson State because they're also winning. If they sucked, they would just be like, well, this experiment didn't work. But he's recruiting.
And they're still FCS, right? They haven't made the jump or anything to FBS. Okay.
Yep. So yeah, they are. They're pretty good. I do wonder, like, if there are actual, like, which I would guess there would be, like, not only just interest, but like offers of, like, hey, we want to hire you. Like, what does Deion do? Like, if the job is good enough, like, if it's if it's not Toledo, nothing against Toledo, but if it's not taking the Toledo job,
right.
If it's like, hey, Arkansas is open.
I was gonna say,
Sam Pittman goes somewhere and Arkansas opens up and says, hey, Deion,
could he make the jump? Would a school pull the trigger on him, a school that's a group of five, or sorry, a Power 5 school?
Well,
I can see group of five,
yeah.
And I can see him saying, no, I'm staying here.
Well, what about
and maybe waiting until an SEC, an ACC team comes calling?
Just popped in my mind because the coach just got fired.
Nebraska?
Nope.
Oh.
Georgia Tech?
Yeah.
Georgia, right there, Atlanta area, Georgia Tech, Power 5. Tap into Deion,
bye-bye triple option.
Yeah, absolutely. Probably. Absolutely.
Prime ain't running that.
Get the players around Georgia to maybe go to Georgia Tech over Georgia because Deion's now recruiting.
There's a few guys in Georgia.
Some decent
guys
there.
Yeah.
I mean, if I'm Georgia Tech, I'm hiring them. Like, that's who I'm going after. I'm going after Deion to hire. There was also the story that they fired the coaching staff, and then they had security escort them out, which is odd. Like, maybe it was contentious. I don't know. But you typically don't see, like, we're going to fire the coach and you have to leave now. We're locking down your office. You're escorted out. Get off the premises. It's weird.
Yeah, usually if there is, like, in, like, corporate life, if there's any sort of, like, hint or possibility of any sort of, like, not, like, violence, but just confrontation.
Well, you got to fire somebody on a Friday.
It's the CHR guy. We're just going to walk you out.
Just, for whatever reason, popped into my head is the John Sherman press conference and Dayton trying to get in the room, and two security guards, one on each arm, is carrying him, and his legs are kicking. Let me in! You'll never take me alive, John! JJ can't hack it! It's my team! My team, I say! I don't know why I just pictured that, but it's gonna be great.
Just saying, I don't think it happened.
But that would be amazing.
I think it did, actually.
I'm just picturing that in my. Maybe that's Mike Matheny. Maybe they do that with Mike Matheny at the end of the season.
That might actually be Cal.
Bob Nightingale? Was that the tweet Bob Nightingale put out?
John Heyman's story?
John Heyman's story. That's what it was.
Yeah, really. I mean, like, you're pretty close. Yeah, the.
Well, Bob Nightingale's the one that had the news that Mike Matheny was going to be hired as the head coach once Ned Yost retired.
Head coach is a weird way to say that.
You know what I meant. Manager.
I mean, yeah, sure.
Head manager. He's going
to
be the.
Hold on. You can't tell me to start correcting you more often and then say, you know what I meant. Because I did. Yeah, I also said that Marcus Mariota was the Colts quarterback.
But I do appreciate that.
That's
you're
what
right.
I'm here for.
I appreciate
he's gonna be the head coach of the team. He's wearing a suit every game, he's not wearing the uniform.
It should switch. Baseball managers should wear uniform, and football coaches should wear the baseball manager's suit.
There you
football
go.
Coach's uniform. Basketball coach's uniform.
I want to see football coach's uniform.
Basketball
pads and everything.
I want, just put them all in uniforms.
I want Bill Self wearing the white-on-white KU jerseys.
No, like, T-shirts underneath.
No T-shirt underneath.
I want Bob Huggins wearing
a West Virginia
jersey with
and
no T-shirt.
Got to be tucked in and everything. These jerseys keep getting tighter every year also.
Socks.
You can't be tugging on them or anything.
You got to do that. Socks. You got to wear the shoes.
Well, Bob's got to roll it up like they do now.
Who's the guy for Houston? The guy for Houston that rolls up his shorts all the way up to
the
top.
They all do.
But the guy from Houston is, like, ridiculously
high. What Huggins is going to do is he's just going to pull them up to his belly button. And
just above the navel.
Just let him hang out up there.
Right above the navel.
Mick, I'm guessing that this sentence largely for people is followed by something disastrous, but I would like to read a tweet that you tweeted out more than 10 years ago.
Oh, no.
Whoa.
Careful. That was the Metro Sports days where longer leash.
This Ned Yost guy will never make it. Fire him now. There's no success in his future.
How have you uncovered this?
I got a text from Adam Dravetta. Said, this conversation is a reminder of an all-time Mick Schaefer tweet. Now, I want to know how Adam remembered this. Here's what I'm going to tell you. This has 8 retweets, 6 likes, This is 10/14/11. This was a 2011 tweet.
My Twitter infancy.
On Twitter for BlackBerry, no less.
Wow. That's right.
The tweet reads, "Guy just gave me the score of a game with a losing team score first. I beat him to death with a flashlight."
Yep. I remember that one.
And that's actually true. It's a true story. Now,
it was a flashlight.
The jury.
Flash.
The jury.
Flashlight.
Flash.
A flashlight.
The jury ruled in Mick Schaefer's favor.
Yeah. That's why I felt like it was okay to read a tweet.
I remember
from 10
people
years ago,
responding to me saying, that's justified.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You don't go to jail for that. You do not. Everybody's going to understand what that is for. But the John Heyman story.
Yeah, you want that also?
Yes, please, since
sure.
That's what I was asking about. I thought it was Bob Nightingale since he had the Mike Matheny thing, but John Heyman's story says what?
He went manager situations through the league, and for the Royals, it's just this blurb. Mike Matheny was hired by Dayton Moore, who's now gone. With players hoping for a change, it's hard to imagine he'll be back. And I don't know that we've heard a phrase quite as straightforward as with players hoping for a change.
No kidding.
I believe it. We've gotten some reports of like bad vibes in the clubhouse. What I think is funny from that is if that really is exactly as simple as it is, players are over it. They're hoping for a change. I'm sure that extends to guys like Kyle Eldred, I would assume. If Dayton Moore was still the president of baseball operations for this team, this change is not happening for another year in all likelihood. And I don't know what it would have taken for him to fire Mike Matheny and Kyle Eldred, because those three dudes were tight. And I think that maybe John Sherman also realized, along with all the other things we talked about on press conference day, I think he realized that you can't break up the band and kind of piecemeal something new. Like, there needed to be a hard reset, which I anticipate there being.
I can't place the name or the coach, but I believe there was a coach that was fired because he refused to fire one of his assistant coaches. And so they said, well, then you're gone too. And he said, okay. Then give me the buyout, but I'm not firing him. It's not his fault, whatever. I don't think that's necessarily what John Sherman did, but I wonder if John Sherman preemptively was like, "Well, you're not going to be willing to make these decisions,
right?
So we're not going to have you be the one that can influence these decisions." JJ's taking over. He's taken over. That we're combining those jobs yet again, and that'll be JJ now, because we need to clean house. We need Mike gone. We need Cal gone. We need to figure out the pitching issues in the minor leagues, the analytics, and JJ is going to be the one that's in charge of that. I'm not going to get into this whole back and forth of you need to fire Mike Matheny. I'm the owner. Yeah, but you want me to do my job. Let me do my job. Yeah, but okay, fine. Then we just got to move on. I'm going to preemptively strike this. JJ's in charge. We're cleaning house.
I would expect the house cleaning to come the offseason. And not do it in the midseason, yeah. Which is always awkward.
I mean, Wednesday the season's over, so it might be a week from today is the offseason.
That's what I'm saying, yeah. And it's not like, okay, it's end of May and you're 19-41 or whatever. I'm like, okay, yeah. We're making a change. Just from what I got from that John Sherman press conference is that he's no nonsense about it. He's ready for change. He's ready to do it now. He wants a buzz around this team when they do look to get that stadium built downtown, and he's not going to waste any time.
Yeah. And I think that's why he made the move.
And look,
he did.
If you want to move on, it's the best time to do it.
Well, and I think that's why you introduced JJ then, is because it gives JJ 2 weeks to get all of his ducks in a row, everything in line, figure out who he wants as the next managerial candidates, all of that stuff. And then the season's over. Now you can go and make the move. Instead of waiting for the season to be over, you make the move on Dayton. Now JJ takes over. JJ, figures all these things out and then moves on from Mike Matheny. You've got a 2-week head start for JJ to put everything together, figure out who are the guys he wants to take over. And at the end of the season, you clean house and you turn the page to the next group of guys. And then you see what happens in the hot stove. If any big, moves are made this offseason, or JJ's really going to put his stamp on the organization. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll continue rolling. We'll hear from Andy Reid coming up at 1 o'clock, along with Travis Kelce. More Zone right after this.
The Zone with Jason Anderson.
So sweaty, mom's spaghetti or whatever the line is.
Weekdays from 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, we'll hear from the Chiefs coming up at the 1 o'clock hour. Andy Reid, Travis Kelce will be talking today. They get set for the Bucs on Sunday. We'll throw our scores out later on in the show before we get to the cuts. We'll see if any of us have the Chiefs winning. We'll find out. Ken Swanson has the Bucks winning. Kendall Gammon has the Chiefs. Matt Derrick has the Chiefs as well. So we'll see with that game coming up on Sunday. So we talked and started the show, and it has been the main topic of conversation today throughout the national media, last night as well, and it was how awful the Tua Tagovailoa injury was with the head and the neck, and then the fencing position that he went into, fencing response right after that had happened, or like immediately after that happened, and you knew something serious was going on, and there was nobody, except for the halftime broadcast crew of Amazon, there was nobody that separated that from Sunday. Like, the immediate response is, we just saw what happened on Sunday. People laughed and joked about it being a back injury and an ankle for him to come back in. And now a few days later, he has this happen as well. Like, it was so easy to connect. And I don't think there's any way to really look at last night and say, well, they're completely independent of each other. Even if they say, well, yeah, but he was cleared and it was a back and an ankle. Because people saw what they saw. They saw his head, you know, whiplash and, you know, have the, you know, trying to shake it out and then losing his balance. Even if it just simply was innocent and he didn't have a concussion, it's still difficult to separate those two from Sunday to Thursday when it's just four days in between, 3 days in between.
Something from just a little bit ago, Chief Medical Officer Dr. Alan Sills was on NFL Network and said Tua was checked for concussion symptoms every day since Sunday. Points out independent neuro expert had to clear him once review is done, full results will be released publicly. I'm not necessarily willing to take all that at perfect face value, but just one thing that popped out there about 30 minutes or so ago.
Well, and that's the thing is they brought in the independent neurologist because they don't want somebody to have a conflict of interest of this is the Bills. We need Tua to come back in the game. It's the Bills. Okay, it's different. We're not playing some random scrub team. We need Tua. You know, if he has to miss the Bengals game, he missed the Bengals game, but that's not a division one. Bring him back in. It is an independent neurologist. So I agree that the, you know, Players Association, as they are, and DeMurray Smith talking about and already opening up the investigation to see what happened, because more transparency is better. Here's what happened. We feel like because if the union comes out and says everything was followed, it's all good, he actually didn't have a concussion, then we move on. At least I would. Because I think the NFLPA is going to do what they can to try to figure out if the protocol was followed. And if it wasn't, it's the league's ass, and they have no problem, you know, disagreeing with the league on things.
No, I mean, look, at this point, okay, we've heard, okay, on Sunday he was evaluated, Monday through Wednesday. I mean, okay, that's a big conspiracy theory at this point, right? If, okay, these doctors are all in on it. And look, we saw Patrick Mahomes leave for, was it concussion? Was it back? Was it neck? In a playoff game and never came back. Forget about, this is a big divisional game here in September. This was January on a 14-2 team looking to run it back and get back to a Super Bowl. They had way more, and I know it's different doctors, and right, there can be different scruples for each and every franchise, but they had way more reason to get him in there. And look, he was never diagnosed officially with a concussion.
I remember
he was in the concussion protocol. They never called it that.
Wasn't that whole week is like, is it was cloak and dagger. Yeah. Is he in the concussion protocol? Is he not? Did he have a concussion? Did he not have a concussion? Because he had said, you know, because the guy had grabbed his neck.
No, they said he was in the concussion protocol. They never called it a concussion.
I don't think Andy Reid ever used the C word, even to say what it wasn't week.
Which C word are you talking about?
Yes, thanks.
A few of them.
The 10-letter C word.
If I would have really felt like making beer to the dump button, I really had every urge to just tell you a whole list of various C words it could have been.
Okay,
this one in
it's
context would be concussion.
Yes. It's a crocodile.
And that was worse than I mean, he passed out on the field, right? He was out.
He was unconscious.
Worse than Tua the first time, sorry.
Yeah, so
as far as
Mahomes or what you're talking about, I'm sorry.
Mahomes going down was worse. It looked worse than Tua. Now, didn't mean it was
the first time on Sunday. Yeah, because, again, Mahomes was knocked unconscious.
Remember we were talking about, like, okay, if you hit a nerve, right? Yeah. You know, they talked about that,
which is really what happened. I mean, the guy grabbed him by the neck, his head went one way, and it cut off the circulation or whatever, and he immediately blacked out. And then he came to, and Mahomes said, "What?" He was like, "I was fine. I was ready to go back in the game." But he had to go through all of the concussion protocol and everything from that point, and he didn't return to the game because, you know, an immediate loss of consciousness is a no-go no matter what. Like, yeah. He could have passed every single test, but if you lose consciousness on the field, it's a literal no-go. You are not allowed back in the game. That is, there's no player, no independent neurologist, no team, trainer, nothing that can do that. It is hard and fast, loss of consciousness,
and
you're done.
I'm going to acknowledge that these NFL teams have a lot of money invested in these guys, and they would do maybe not the most appropriate things to get these guys back on the field. Okay, I think that still exists. But if we have 4 days of reports from an independent doctor on this, on one side, and the other side is people on Twitter saying, hey, that looked like a concussion, I'm going to side with the doctors. So the hit last night looked violent enough to be like, okay, he's never had any concussion issues whatsoever. That could send him to the hospital. They might have had some sort of connection, and it didn't help Sunday to Thursday.
Right.
Just right turn right around. And a similar type whiplash hit. And so it was bad. It was really I'd never seen that on a field, and I want to see it again.
Well, wasn't it Parham that had the same fencing?
Yeah, it was similar. It wasn't the fingers.
He was
but it was
shivering.
That,
yeah. Because right, it was cold. 68 degrees
right
there.
It's cold. And somebody tweeted out and was like, well, at least they're not talking about how cold it is there.
One thing that Jeff Allen tweeted out this morning, kind of along those lines of it, you want to assume that the independent neurologist has the correct information, but what Jeff Allen said, former longtime player, said he exhibited symptoms on the field of play, and that's all the team needed, in my opinion, to shut him down. And that, I think...
You talk about Sunday?
First time through. Right. You could go through and see back and all that other stuff. When you come up and you're grabbing your head and shaking out the cobwebs and everything, if you're operating from a perspective of the player's safety and not the game's functionality, if your friend fell over, hit his head on the ground, and then walked up shaking his head, you hopefully wouldn't be trying to, get to laser tag immediately with them and keep the night going.
Well, and this, remember here too, this is a rule to save the players from themselves, because the union barking back is one thing, but I bet 90 plus percent of the players want to get back out there. My brain be damned.
Well, and I think what Jeff Allen is saying is part of the no-go, the no return to play, is one, loss of consciousness, but it's also gross motor instability. Mm-hmm. Which, when you're wobbly and you can't really pick yourself up, it's kind of the gross motor instability. So I think that's where most people were like, come on, he might have had a back, but that's an immediate no-go in the return to play protocol. We played a clip earlier from Chris Canty, who won a Super Bowl with the Giants with Steve Spagnuolo's defense, played until 2015. He said he knows of other players that would deliberately fail the baseline concussion test.
Wow.
So it made it easier if they were concussed to pass that same test. That doesn't surprise me really at all. It's crazy, but not really surprising.